This episode has descriptions of sexual content and violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Mystified.
Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Mystified. This is a podcast where we bring you strange and unusual stories. My name is Tasha.
And this is Steven.
And we are back in a new month in 2021. Hello, February. January seemed really, really long.
Yeah.
It had, 12 months in it by itself?
Yeah, probably.
A lot happened in January.
We got 6 days of peace, and then...
We did. And then...
The return.
2020 wasn't done. So it's like at the end of the horror movie where you think the person got away, and then they either get in the killer's car that they didn't know was with the killers, or a dead hand comes out and grabs them, or, you know.
I like the end of Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah, or like literally hell opens up and they, you know, drag her under, what did she get on, like a subway or a train or something?
Just poor, finally over.
Poor Justin Long, his face, he's like, oh, like she wasn't lying. That's actually a really great movie. Sam Raimi, is he the one who did it?
I think so.
Yeah, very. Yeah, because the whole like gypsy lady fight scene in the car. So if you haven't watched that, it's actually really good. So we did have a contest winner. Her name was Melissa. She actually sent me a deep, dark secret from high school. I'm not going to reveal it. You know, I don't think I'm allowed to anyways. She didn't tell me whether or not I could, but I'm not going to. But she did win the t-shirt for the contest for the random drawing. I sent her a message, so don't be trying to email me saying you're Melissa and you're not the right Melissa. I'm going to know because I already messaged her. But that's exciting. So she's going to get a Mystified t-shirt. Yay her. We're going to be doing some other contests soon. We just haven't had time to come up with any, but we need to. I don't know if February we'll get it in, but definitely for March we'll come up with something cool. Yeah. Just nodding your head doesn't work in a podcast. You have to actually say words.
I thought this was a visual format.
No, it's all audio. So,
I've been doing this wrong all along.
I'm the only one who can see you agreeing to that. So if you could just verbally,
now that I know where I am,
Oh, now you're going to talk?
Yeah, I'll understand now.
Got it. Excellent. Okay. So last thing, if you like what we do and you haven't already, we would really, really, really appreciate it if you would go and leave us a review. It helps us with ranking on different podcast platforms. You can go to our website at mystifiedpod.com and there's literally a button that says rate us. And then the website will link you to Apple Podcasts so you can review there. Or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, just scroll all the way down to the bottom and you can leave a review right there. We would really appreciate it. So, you know, people can find us when they search us because there was another Mystified.
Well, that's only if they leave us positive reviews.
Yeah, don't leave like a 1-star. Don't be a dick, man. Come on. At least a 3. The fact that we do as much research as we do, that alone should be 3 stars. And then you're 0.5 star. I'm definitely 1.5 stars. That's 5 stars. That's, yeah.
I'm 0.5 star.
Remember, you weren't talking earlier. You were nodding your head. So that's why you're 0.5 star right now. Yeah.
I disagree.
All right. So I brought the story for tonight. It was actually one that we kind of briefly touched on. We just kind of mentioned it. And then we had a listener that was like, hey, you talked about this, but you didn't go into detail about it. I would like some details about it. So, all right, Buttercup. I got that story here for you. I'm going to throw a disclaimer in there. There's going to be a disclaimer before the beginning of this episode, but I'm going to do another one now. This may have trigger warnings. If you are sensitive to acts of violence, rape, minors, torture, anything along those lines, this is not going to be the episode for you. there is a lot of this that I do kind of just brush over. I also don't go into a lot of detail about one of the people that we're going to be discussing simply because fuck him. And yeah, but even for me to be able to tell the story and tell it properly, I do have to give you some details that are not going to be pleasant at all. So if you are sensitive to a lot of those things, you may want to go back, maybe listen to my favorite episode, The Wasp Woman Murder. You can go listen to that one. Sound quality shit, but it's a fantastic story and not as dark as where we're about to go. So disclaimed.
See, I thought we were turning over a new leaf this year because I had a fun, crazy story that didn't destroy people's souls after we ended.
We switched roles
very brutally. But now I'm
about to just, I'm gonna fuck up your childhood. I'm gonna fuck up toys. I'm gonna mess it all up for you. Yeah. So cool. Let's get into it. Whenever you do research on serial rapists and or murderers, you don't really find a whole lot that are able to lead double lives. Like very well, right? So they can like compartmentalize that part of their fantasy and their personality and whatever so perfectly that they can live a double life. However, it does exist. BTK was one. Ted Bundy was actually really, really good at it. Who else?
And Gacy was successful at his double life.
Yeah.
He's still creepy as fuck. I wouldn't have been his friend, but.
Right. Oh, could you imagine hiring him for? No, I can't. I can't. Yeah, never mind. Yeah. So
get a nice crawl space under your house. What you use that one for?
So while it does happen, it's not really common. But what's less common is when two people that have the same disgusting particular taste fall in love and get together, because a lot of times that personality doesn't work well or play well with another one. There are some instances. I mean, what were the two guys in California? I just forgot them. They talk about them in The Night Stalker, the Hillside Stranglers.
Yeah.
So there are some that do.
Well, in a lot of those situations, though, you usually have the one dominant partner and then you have the other partner that's trying to keep up and keep the dominant partner happy.
Right.
But you wonder if they were separate, if the submissive partner would even be doing anything.
Exactly. Exactly. In this story, we do find two people that share horrific qualities and, you know, do a lot of horrible and terrible things. So this is the story of the Ken and Barbie killers. To start with, Paul, and I'm going to fuck up their names. And again, I don't care. Fuck this guy. But here we go. So Ken and, excuse me, his name's not Ken. So Paul Bernardo, I think, I don't care how you say it, was born on August 27th, 1964 in Ontario, Canada, to Kenneth and Marilyn Bernardo. The Bernardos were a wealthy middle-class family. And Paul was a young, kind of attractive, rich kid. Blonde hair, just, you know, not ugly, but just very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Not cracker. That's not what I meant.
Wow.
No.
He's handsome in that boring dime a dozen kind of way.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing remarkable about
but
him.
But he's not offensive look. Like he's right. Like he's not like you wouldn't notice him because he was like, ooh, like he's just kind of bland.
Yeah,
I was trying to describe the taste of a cracker. Not say he was not trying to use a derogatory term, even though he does deserve it, but whatever. But I was trying to like come up with like the anyways, sorry.
Yeah, he didn't stand out in a crowd.
Right.
He's very blasé.
In 1975, Kenneth, Paul's father, was charged with child molestation. So predatory behavior was prevalent in this household even before Paul kind of gets out on his own doing his own thing. And even after this happens, because his father's charged and like goes to jail for a little while for it, it doesn't negatively affect Paul at all. Like, people still claim that he's a very happy, rambunctious, always smiling little kid, right? When Paul's 16, his mother reveals a bombshell. He was the bastard son of an extramarital affair. This seemed to have a significant effect on Paul, and his behavior changed drastically. He began to refer to his own mother as a fat slob and a whore, and that kind of evolved into just more like, not, I guess, verbal abuse and just like this woman was like dead to him kind of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing the whole we got our trigger, our hatred of our mother type thing. Right. Our okay. mommy issues. And even when he went and enrolled in the University of Toronto, he would then begin picking up women at bars and then later humiliate them and beat them, like hit them and slap them. And it became his thing to pick up women and then in some way humiliate and degrade them.
So we have a classic mm-hmm. punishing my mother mm-hmm. for being a whore thing. Mm-hmm.
Because my daddy wasn't my molesting daddy wasn't my daddy. You know,
that's weird because it'd be like he had a chance right yeah. there. It's like, oh, that guy that's a piece of shit actually isn't my dad. So I have a new lease on life. But yeah. instead, he decides to make a hard turn into women are shit. I'm going to mm-hmm. abuse them.
Well, his mom kind of goes into like a deep depression and ends up moving into their basement and living in the basement of their home in Scarborough. So she's like, she just completely detaches from reality.
There's a lot of things going on in that family.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Talking about Paul, he was good looking and had enough charm and charisma that he could get women to lower their guards and get close to him. So he's got the Ted Bundy thing he's just this likable guy and, you know, whatever. He's just a monster. In 1987, Paul meets Carla. Okay, here we go again with the bad names. Homolik. Fuck, I bet. Again, don't really care. But I need to care about
somebody
the family.
Else's name.
Sorry, family. Bernardo and Homolik. Okay. I'm sure y'all can watch a YouTube video and see how these are properly pronounced. You know I'm not going to fucking do it right. Okay, so cool. He was 23 and she was 17 at the time whenever they get together. Carla was born to Dorothy. Carla was born to Dorothy and Carol Homolik. Okay, anyway, I have to say that name like five more fucking times, too. I'm really sorry. And in Ontario in 1970, she is the eldest of three kids. She was described as a well-adjusted, pretty smart and popular child that loved animals. She worked at a veterinary clinic after high school. Like Paul, there was nothing in Carla's outward behavior that would hint at a malicious or deviant type streak. Paul and Carla had an immediate and strong attraction, one that only intensified when Paul discovered that, unlike other girls he had dated, Carla shared some of the same sick fantasies he had. He knew that he could refine this girl. Carla was obsessed with him and would do anything to make him happy. So here we go with that whole dynamic, right?
Feeding his narcissism.
Yep. They quickly began a sadomasochistic relationship. I'm having a hard time with that fucking word. In which Paul acted as an abusive master and Carla was the willing slave. So I'm going to take a side note right here and talk about that BDSM is not a depraved thing. It's a sexual lifestyle that many people willingly and happily partake in. And I'm in no way saying that BDSM or sexual kinks or fantasies are a sick thing. The difference in this story is that it was done in a way that was harmful and malicious. It was not two consenting people living out their sexual fantasies in a safe and consensual environment. It led to rape and murder. So
it was when it was between those two willing partners. But it didn't. No.
So, no, sir, like you did to me, you need to hang on just a second, okay?
Okay.
You need to hang on.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyways, I'm just trying to say I am not shit talking BDSM. If you're into that, fantastic. Do you have your safe word? But in this situation, it is not the normal counter culture lifestyle, whatever it is, that most people partake in. It was what is it? Hurt don't harm. It was harm. It was all a bunch of harm. It wasn't just a little bit of hurt. It was harm all over the place. So, okay. And this is an example of why I say that. The entire time that Paul and Carlo were dating, Paul was also brutally raping girls ages 15 to 20 with Carla's knowledge and approval. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. That, like, you know, not the same, not healthy, not healthy in any way.
Looking for weird? You found it. The Xandron Stone Science and Supernatural Podcast. From ghosts and hauntings to black-eyed kids, crypto creatures, cults, exorcisms, UFOs, and everything in between. If it's out there and it's weird, we're going to talk about it. Xandron Stone, the Science and Supernatural Podcast. Listen now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podfix. And remember to live life in excess.
Paul eventually asked Carla to marry him. Carla told her friend that Paul and I have never been happier. He is being so great, so romantic, but that's typical for my baby. But the reality was, 3 years into their relationship, Paul was bored. He complained that Carla had not come to him as a virgin. He had been denied her virginity. Well, I was going to say like maidenhead or something, but I don't know. Well, but what other guy is like, we've been having this crazy wild sex for 3 years, but you weren't a virgin. I mean, that just sounded like
a lot of guys.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Whatever. Yeah. Don't be a douche, dudes. Okay. And he soon turned his attentions to Tammy, Carla's 15-year-old sister. At this point, Carla was 20, and Paul seemed to have a taste for them just, you know, a little bit younger, because he got with her when she was 17.
Right.
So Carla should have been outraged, but instead was okay with the intent, with the attentions, and wanting to please Paul, said she would give him Tammy's virginity for Christmas that year.
That's a big yikes.
Yep. When Paul and Carla would have sex, he would have her dress up as Tammy and act like Tammy and be like, oh, Paul, you're the best. I'm only 15. Like, have to like say her age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. Anyways, yikes. Yeah, he's disgusting. So on December 23rd, 1990, while at a Christmas party at the Homolka. Homolka. Somebody just, y'all just go. I'm just going to say the H's, okay? So at a Christmas party at the H's family home, Carla spiked her own sister's drink with animal tranquilizers that she had stolen from the clinic where she worked. That night, as the rest of the family slept and poor Tammy was unconscious, Carla held a halothane-soaked cloth over her sister's nose and mouth, and Paul and her took turns raping Tammy while videotaping the entire brutal incident. Yeah. During this horrific attack on Tammy, in her own home, by people she trusted, Tammy began to vomit and started to choke. The couple panicked and tried to revive her. They were unsuccessful, so they hid the evidence and cleaned up before calling an ambulance. Tammy would never regain consciousness and was pronounced dead at the hospital. The medical team treating her noted a chemical burn on her face, but it was not investigated. They also did not detect nor have any reason to suspect the drugs in her system. Her death was ruled as an accident as a result of choking on vomit from alcohol poisoning.
Convenient.
Very convenient.
And lazy.
It's the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Carla and Paul moved out of the family home a few days later, giving them privacy so they can mourn the loss of their child. There are reports that Carla and Paul had raped Tammy a few months before this, but some places that I, or some of the things I read said they did. Some said that they, this was the Christmas time was the first time. But another time that was speculated is that they put Valium in her spaghetti. And then once she was out, only Paul raped her that time. But then the Christmas thing wouldn't make sense because they, she was giving him her virginity. So that's why I don't know if that's embellished. I'm not quite sure. And it's not like we can get, you know, the truth out of anybody. So this horrible crime was not a deterrent in any way. In 1991, Carla lured a teen coworker that she had befriended to her home she now shared with Paul. The couple drugged the girl, raped her, and abused her, and videotaped it. The victim did survive and woke up with no memory of the horrific events. So right now, like, rape is kind of their MO. That's what they're into. And drugs and then videotaping themselves, you know, do these things with all these people, but without having to worry about the victims remembering what happened. This girl, I think, was lucky simply because Carla worked with her. So,
yeah, making her disappear.
Yeah.
It's really close to home.
Yeah. I mean, and the sister wasn't supposed to die either. Like, that was an accident. It actually was an accident. But, you know, escalation. On the evening of June 14th, Leslie Mahaffey was at the funeral home for the viewing of a friend who had died in a car crash. After the funeral, she and some friends went out to party and reminisce about the life that had been taken too soon. A couple of friends walked her home at 2 a.m. on June 15th. When they got to the house, the side door was locked. Leslie assured her friends that the front door would be unlocked and told her friends to leave. She tried the front door, but because she was out past curfew, her mom had locked all the doors. She walked to a payphone to call a friend to ask if she could stay over, but the answer was no. She talked with her friend on the phone for about 30 minutes and then headed back to her house, saying that she would wake her damn mom up if she had to get back into the house. The next day, her mom called the police when her daughter failed to show for the funeral. On June 18th, she filed paperwork to have the police look for her daughter, stating that she was a possible runaway and needed to be returned home. Unfortunately, her being a runaway would have been the best possible scenario. Instead, while walking back to her house from the payphone, Leslie ran into Paul.
That's very unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. Paul was in her neighborhood stealing license plates, and in a cruel twist of fate, Leslie crossed his path. He offered her a cigarette, which he said was back in his car. When they were close to his car, he wrapped a sweater around her head and forced her into the vehicle. He then brought her home to Carla, and they drugged, raped, and abused her for the next 24 hours and videotaped all of it. They did blindfold her, so she wouldn't be able to identify them, but then they did kill her on June 15th. Carla claims that Paul strangled her, and Paul said that she died from drugs that Carla gave her. One disturbing thing both killers agreed on was that they gave her a teddy bear to hold during the breaks between their attacks. Once she was dead, they moved her to the basement. Then, in a completely psychopathic move, they had Carla's family over for dinner.
Yeah, that makes sense.
While there's a dead girl in the basement. A dead, young, teenage, innocent, baby child girl in the fucking basement. These two can just make dinner.
They're narcissists. Nobody else matters.
Once the dinner party was over, they dismembered the body with a saw and encased it in concrete. They made many trips to Lake Gibson to dump the concrete body blocks, but one proved to be very heavy, so they left it by the water. It was damn near 200 pounds, the one that held her torso and her face. Carla and Paul married on June 29th, 1991, and the very same day, a horrified couple canoeing in Lake Gibson discovered concrete blocks containing human body parts.
How would they have discovered? I mean,
because one of them they just left by there.
Right. But if it was encased in concrete,
they're not very good at that. They're not good at this.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that's,
there was something sticking out or something odd about it where they were like, oh my God.
Picturing like mafioso style where it just looks like big blocks of concrete with body parts completely concealed. But
yeah, those would be in the bottom of a lake, not sitting next to it because their asses couldn't move 200 pounds.
Because sissy rapist can't lift 200
exactly.
pounds.
No, for some reason, they were discovered by this couple canoeing, and it's either that something hanging out or whatever, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's a lucky break. It's just...
Yeah.
If they would have been better at what they were doing, that would have...
Well, lucky for us, they were dumbasses.
Yeah, so, very.
As the grisly discovery was made, the killers enjoyed an elaborate wedding ceremony, which included their entrance in a white horse-drawn carriage. Leslie's dental appliance and dental records were what were used to identify her body. So that's how they figured out who she was. Poor baby had braces. Almost a year later, on April 16th, 1992, the couple struck again, this time grabbing 15-year-old Kristen French as she walked home from school. They pretended that they needed directions and then forced her in the car at knife point. Unfortunately for them, Kristen was very disciplined and reliable, and she always got home at a certain time. So when it had been an hour and she hadn't made it home, her parents called the police. They started a search of the area. Like, they immediately immobilized instead of being like, my daughter ran away. Like, they,
let's give it a couple of days and see if she comes home.
Right. Yeah. So they kept Kristen for 3 days with the same MO. So rape, torture, videotaping it, all that. Mm-hmm. This time they had to use a lot of alcohol to subdue her. One thing that is noted from the tapes of the horrific crimes is the girl's defiance. She is reported to have said, some things are worth dying for, and I don't know how your wife can stand to be around you. She did not cower or cooperate with Paul. This was an amazing young woman, and she fought him until the very end. Paul strangled her with an extension cord and left her body in a ditch along a rural road. They had shaved her hair in an attempt to confuse people of her identity. What? This is how dumb they are.
Yeah, right? What?
That is not how that works. But
they're
what I'm
looking
saying.
For a girl with hair.
If we take
if
all
we
the
leave
hair
the
off,
body with no hair, they won't be able to identify her.
They'll just walk by her and go, don't know what that is. Not, yeah, like.
Fucking morons.
Anyways, okay. After dumping the body, they went to Carla's family home for Easter dinner.
Yeah, you checks know. Out.
Yeah, just. Local police soon realized that the two murders were connected and started to reach out to the community, I guess, due to certain restraint marks, the same MO, because they could still tell that Leslie had been tortured and raped because they got all her body pieces.
Well, I mean, yeah, if the body encased in concrete hadn't been, because it was how long? A couple days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, the concrete wasn't even fully cured yet. So, yeah, you would have been able to get quite a bit out of it.
Oddly enough, Paul had been questioned many times about both missing girls and concerning the Scarborough rapist, but nothing had ever panned out. Starting in May of 1987, a string of violent attacks began to happen. In the early hours of the morning of May 4th, 1987, a young woman getting off the bus was grabbed and brutally raped near her parents' home. Over the next week, there would be two more similar assaults. All of the victims were between the ages of 15 to 21, and the attacks all included beatings, intense verbal abuse, and dire threats to discourage victims from going to the police. The media dubbed him the Scarborough Rapist, and for nearly 5 years, he terrified women in this area. On December 27th, 1993, Paul finally crossed a line. Paul beat Carla severely with a flashlight. When Carla returned to work a few days later, her coworkers called her parents to report the abuse. They didn't believe the whole she fell down the stairs thing. And if you look at the pictures, she's got two giant black eyes. Like, it's, I mean, not, okay, whatever. Not going to say what I was about to say. So her parents come and they think they are rescuing Carla from Paul. They take her to the hospital and she files charges against him. Within 2 months, a DNA sample taken from Berdinardo turned up as a match for the Scarborough rapist, and he was put under surveillance before eventually being arrested in February of 1993. So when he had been questioned 2 years prior, 26 months prior to her finally filing a report on him, they had taken a DNA sample. It just took 26 months for it to finally go through the system. And then here comes his wife and she's like, oh, he beat me.
We're talking about what years are we at now?
We're in 93.
Yeah. So that checks out. Yeah. I mean, there was very few labs.
Yeah.
Processing.
So now they're like, holy shit, we got this dude. We're matching his DNA to 13 victims. So that had been raped. And now his wife is saying, oh, he's beaten women and all this kind of stuff. So.
Well, you know what it probably was is because he's a little rich, spoiled shit. He probably had a really good lawyer and was able to get the state to show its hand. They didn't really have anything. So, yeah, they couldn't go any further.
Carla, realizing that, you know, shit's probably about to go down, gets a lawyer and seeks out a plea bargain in exchange for testifying against Paul. She claims that Paul had told her that he had raped at least 30 women. And she knew about 3 murders he had committed and knew that there were tapes to prove it. So the government agreed to a 12-year sentence in exchange for her cooperation. And they got a search warrant to search the home. But here's the fucked up thing. And I don't know if this is Canadian law or whatever. I'm not quite sure how this works. But this search warrant, they could not mess up or like disarray this house in any way. They had to see the video. The videotapes had to be in plain sight. They couldn't ransack the house. They couldn't open walls. They couldn't go into like the attic. Like they literally had to walk around and move things very gently to be able to find these videotapes that Carla is talking about that she says shows all these heinous crimes.
So apparently in Canada, they don't just bring a bulldozer in and just destroy your house.
Yeah, they won't like open the walls or nothing.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. So they go in there and they're looking, and the only tape they find shows Carla sexually abusing the Jane Doe from her work.
That's good.
After 2 weeks, the police call off the search. Carla is charged on May 18th for 2 counts of manslaughter. She is given this deal in exchange for testimony and information about the crimes that Paul committed. She claims that Paul was abusive and forced her to do all of these acts. She was afraid for her life.
Of course.
Whenever he brought up wanting to rape and have sex with her sister and drug her, she cried about it. She was very unhappy. She didn't agree with it. And then all these girls, he forced her to, help murder and rape them and videotape it. And then she was abused in their relationship where he was, the dominant and she was submissive and he would beat her and, sexually abuse her, which maybe he did. I mean, I don't know.
There's probably no doubt that he did abuse her too, but. I don't know. It's a fishy, fishy cell there.
On May 6th, Paul's attorney, Ken Murray, enters Paul's home and extracts some videotapes from a hidden compartment behind a light in the upstairs bathroom.
In all fairness, the cops wouldn't have found that anyway.
No. And watches them on the very day that Carla is charged. On May 19th, Paul is charged with 2 counts of each of first degree murder, kidnapping, forcible confinement, and aggravated sexual assault. On July 6th, Carla pleads guilty and is sentenced to 12 years. Her trial is held before Paul's, and once Paul's happens, the country will be shocked and dismayed to learn about how big of a role Carla actually played. There's a whole lot that goes into these trials. There was like a ban on the media and what they were allowed to report. They weren't even really allowed to talk about these tapes, even though everybody knew about them. Nobody could find them, you know, anything like that. So there's a lot that goes into that. And if you want to research that and Google that, but a lot of it centers around him. And I know I'm not talking about this asshole any more than I absolutely have to. So his attorney, though, quits before his trial and is like, oh, by the way, here are the tapes. And he finally turns the tapes over. However, he gives them to Paul's defense attorney, who keeps them for 2 weeks before ever giving them to the prosecution. And then during Paul's trial, basically his whole thing is to like tear down Carla's character and how big of a part she actually played. They were not able to show the tapes, but they played them. And so they played them in court and they are incredibly.
They played the tapes for the jury?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways.
But also, I like how the lawyer's like, okay, I can't defend this piece of shit. He's so terrible. By the way, new defense attorney, here you go.
Well, I think it was the tapes is where he was like, I can't do this. I can't.
Right. He backs out. But then he's just like,
because he knew the defense would have needed to do the right thing and give the tapes over to the prosecution. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he whatever.
Yeah.
OK, so Paul is found guilty on all charges and is serving life in prison. He's believed to have raped over 13 young women and had stalked many others.
I thought she alleged like 30.
She alleges 30. 13 is all that was reported. Yeah, they also believe he probably could have killed a few more girls before then.
True.
He was also stalking. I think there's like 10 different reports of him stalking other girls and like them finding out. And they never knew who he was, but they give such a great, if you get online and you look him up, there is a police sketch of the guy that's like raping and stalking women. Mm-hmm. And it is spot fucking on. Like, you know, some of them are like,
they don't even look human.
Like the Night Stalker one. You're like, what? And when the guy was like, he looked exactly the same. I'm like, to what? What is that? Like an alien face. No, this one, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
It's surreal, like how close they got it. But they also did. It's almost like a side image. It's not a front on. It's like the side of his face. Yeah. And yeah, so he's just, and like I said, you want to look it up. They go through all of it in the trial. He's a total piece of shit. But yeah. So Bernardo's application for parole in 2018 was denied after only 30 minutes of deliberation. A lawyer on behalf of the victims' families reported that there's never been an apology from Paul. There's never been any indication whatsoever of remorse. He was able to apply again in 2020, but I don't know if he did. I mean, we would have heard if this dude got out of prison. I don't think so. He's a violent, violent offender. He needs to stay right where he is. Carla was released in 2005. She had like a whole lot of stipulations she had to follow to like be released, all this kind of stuff. She ended up getting married, having three kids, and moved to Guatemala, I think is where it says she ended up settling at, under a new assumed name. She had to, because people like us keep talking about this case and keeping it alive, because, I mean, it's important, one, for the victims, because they're not here anymore and they're not here to tell their story. So somebody needs to. That is the Ken and Barbie murders. For about a year, they raped and murdered three young, innocent women that did not fucking deserve it at all.
Well, I mean, nobody deserves it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they weren't high-risk situations. They weren't. One of them, it was her own fucking family.
If you really look at it statistically, I mean, the whole thing that most people operate on, with it being most victims of like serial killers or serial rapists are high risk, that's not really true. It's usually normal people, because normal people don't suspect. I mean, people who are quote unquote high risk tend to know that there's psychos out there that think that they're an easy target.
Right.
But when it's your fucking brother-in-law, you're never going to suspect that shit.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So they're called Ken and Barbie, obviously, because they're blonde, not terrible looking. She looks a little rough. But again, this is the lifestyle you're living. There's that case. That's a pretty intense one. Again, I skimmed over a lot of very graphic details.
Yeah.
There's a couple books that have been written that spend a lot more time going through their backgrounds, the psychology of it, dissecting them individually, and then all the stuff that they did together. So there's a lot more deep dives if you really want to study this case some more, but
you probably don't.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones that, like, there's nothing really to gain per se by digging into this abyss. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible, like, on all fronts.
Yeah.
It's the story of a spoiled little woman hating piece of shit that pretty much never had to be held accountable for anything his whole life. Mm-hmm. And just completely continued to do whatever the hell he wanted because nobody ever told him no.
Right.
And this is what you get. Like,
yeah,
that's simple. Hers is a little more confusing because you have to wonder, like, was it the fact that she was abused by him that made her participate or not? Which
he says no, she says yes. So,
but it's also very convenient for her to say yes.
True.
So, I don't know.
She's on videotape actively
That's
raping, and those tapes were destroyed.
Yeah.
Once the trial was over, the Canadian courts destroyed them. That was the defense's part on it. They didn't go back and break her plea agreement because she did actually, she had told them about the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't lie. And then she told them, you know, about all the things that he had done. It's just always in her version, he strangles, he does everything. In his version, she's very much a participant and then is usually the one that killed them with overdosing of certain drugs. One thing to note, when Tammy, her sister, was buried, they put a picture of Carla and Paul in the casket. And like, because, you know, people are buried with mementos and shit like that, right? And when the parents exhumed the body and took everything out, they were like, yeah, you can go ahead and leave that fucking picture out.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was reburied and reinterred with out that picture of her murderers in the fucking casket with her.
Well, see, one of the things about the accounts that I've read of the videos is that her participation is almost gleeful.
Yeah.
It's not that she's just like, okay, I have to. No.
Yeah. No, she's actively
enjoying what she's doing, which is, to me, says a lot about the he made me do it narrative. So,
see,
it's obviously which side I'm on this one. But
so, but I think she also tried to get the deal and get all that hammered out. Because I think she thought maybe they wouldn't find the tapes.
Yeah.
She didn't think Paul was going
to. That's the other thing. She struck first.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm going to get the deal. I'm going to go first.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to sing on everything he did. But fuck, I've got those tapes. But you know what? I can just. It fits the personality traits and the reactions of a narcissist that's cornered. Like, you've still got to stay on top. You've still got to be the one that comes out. Even if it means that shit's going to come out about you that you might rather not, as long as you win, that's what's important.
Yeah.
And 12 years for those horrendous crimes, that's a win.
Nothing. Yeah. I feel really terrible for her parents and her one other sibling. I mean, I can't even like begin to imagine what that's like, but yeah.
So
terrible.
Yeah.
All right, starting February off with murdering couples. Yeah, it's not not quite Valentine's-y, I guess, so to say. Maybe.
Oh, no.
No?
No, that's terrible.
Okay, never mind. Terrible.
Yeah.
Sorry. Didn't mean to go there. I like chocolate. That's why I like Valentine's Day. I like to eat candy. Jeremy. So cool. Well, there you go. That is that terrible story. So now you know, if you had not known about them.
I think anybody's going to ask you a question again.
Probably not. Sorry. I mean, you know, true crime, not all of it's always super interesting. You know, from just like a psychological perspective, some of it is just really fucking terrible. And you're just like, why? But then again, you know, it always take it as like a learning thing. Sometimes you can't even trust people that you should be able to trust, you know, in situations, which is really terrible. Maybe that's not the lesson to take away from that. Sorry. What's the lesson?
I would say the lesson is probably the one that really gets me is the girl who is out late and tries to get somebody to let her stay with them.
Yeah.
And can't. And so she's out walking at 2:30 in the morning, which gives an opportunity for this cruising piece of shit to find her. Let's not do that.
I mean, in being young in the 90s, and you know, that was the thing. We got locked out before because it was just like, sorry about your luck, learn your lesson. Yeah. And that's the thing. If you're going to parent like that and you're going to say, okay, you don't come home in time, you're going to have to take the consequences of being out all night and figuring out what to do. Make sure you fully understand what some of those consequences could be, which is your child may not come back.
Which, if you think about it, it's really fucking bizarre because we're talking about the 90s, where we're coming off of the 80s, which was the Satanic Panic and Stranger Danger. And I remember that too. I remember we were taught, you know, don't trust strangers, don't do this, don't do that. But if just thinking back to my own childhood and a lot of the kids I knew, their parents would say shit like that, but then the kids out roaming the streets in the middle of the fucking, there was like a disconnect there in the middle. So yeah, I bet that was probably the thing, is the parents were probably well aware of the dangers, but dangers don't happen to us. They happen to somebody else, which that's is true.
I mean, and she was a teenager, so she could have been going through that difficult phase where her mom was just like fed up. Maybe she had ran away before. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to fault her. I'm just saying that, like, hindsight and in retrospect, like,
yeah,
maybe we just try to be a little bit more mindful that there are creatures out there that will take advantage of situations like that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Just understand the consequences if those are the decisions you were going to make, for sure. Because, yeah, I've ended up in situations I did not need to be in simply because somebody was trying to teach me a lesson.
Yeah.
And I ended up in a much worse situation than if you had just, you know, like grounded me for a week. Yeah. Like, so, yeah, I mean, it's, it is something to really be careful about. So, cool. All right. Well, next time we promise to be a little bit more cheerful. So, you know, you can't really have a lot of comedy gold when you're talking about such a heavy, heavy, heavy story. That's that's not like, I didn't even like bring a question. Like, I don't even, you know, I can't really bounce back from that. It's just a very heavy story. We've all shared it together. Now we're going to move on from it.
Yeah.
We're going to move on. So, all right, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this evening. We really appreciate it. Like I said at the beginning of the episode, if you like what we do, we would really appreciate a review and some words. You can do that by heading over to mystifiedpod.com and leave us a review there. It helps us come up on searches better. It's really good for our algorithm and of whatever these platforms use, but we would really, really appreciate it. If you want to chat with us more and hang out in our little part of the internet, please come on over to Instagram at mystified_pod Or you can join us on Facebook, where we've got a really cool Facebook group. It is called Mystified Podcast Discussion Group. And over there, we have some other listeners and some like-minded people, and we're just having fun, you know, not stressing each other out, delivering the best memes on the internet, weird stories, just all kinds of good stuff. So definitely come over there and hang out with us if you would like. Share with your friends. Talk about us at your workplace.
Probably don't listen to us at your workplace.
Probably not. Maybe skip this episode at your workplace. Shit, the Christmas ones were more pleasant than this one. So, like I said, Wasp Woman, episode 2, baby. Just got to go through that bad audio, but you make it through there. If you're new here and you're listening to this episode, this is your first one, welcome. If you decide to go back and listen to us from the beginning, episode 1 is total horseshit. There's also music playing in the background. It's weird. It's uncomfortable. We were uncomfortable. Like, I think we restarted like 20 times. It's just, you just look, listen, everyone has to start from somewhere. And we started below the bottom. Okay. Clearly, you're listening to this one. You made it all the way through. We got much better.
I've still heard worse. I'm just going to say.
Well, I'm just saying, don't judge us too hard on that. Start with episode 2, which is the Wasp Woman murder. It's a great episode. Anyways, any other parting words for our friends?
No, I think they're probably ready to go because you've destroyed their souls.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I'll come back with a quirky, fun, cheerful story next week. I promise. I'm lying. I can't promise that. I don't know what we'll be talking about. I'll find a good ghost haunting. Let's just find some people terrorized by specters. That's good. Yeah. Makes everyone feel good and bubbly on that. You're not talking again.
Well, no, cause I'm thinking.
Oh,
I'm thinking.
That conveys well through that microphone.
Thinking it's time to end the episode.
All right. Until next time. Bye.
Mystified.
Podcast.